In this week's Parsha, Parshat B'Shalach, so of course we have Kriyat Yamsuf. And the Torah tells us that, as we all know the story, Moshe Rabbeinu stretches out his arm, the water split, B'nai Yisrael walk through, the Egyptians start chasing B'nai Yisrael, Hashem tells Moshe, stretch out your arm a second time, the waters return to their original position, and the Egyptians drowned. Vayashuvu amayim vayechasu asarecha v'saparashim l'chol chel paro abayim achreim bayam lo nishar bahem ad echad. So it says the waters returned, and on all of Paro's forces and everyone, and there didn't remain ad echad. Now, the question is how you understand arachad. One could easily understand it to mean lanisha behen arachad. Not even one person was left. But the Daz Ken Mibali Atosos, based on opinion found in Chazal, explains differently. Lanisha behen arachad, says the Daz Ken, aval echad nisha. There wasn't up to one who remained, but one remained. One Egyptian was saved in the whole Kriyas Yamsuf. And who is that? Vahu Paro. V'had ichtib b'sefer Tehillim, echad mehem lo notar. Right, we say it in davening. Not one remained. Haynu mikol amo. Not one from his nation remained. But he remained. In fact, there are midrashim that say that Paro not only remained alive, but he actually got, well, not exactly his job back, but he got a similar job back. Many, many years later, he is the king in Nineveh. Right. Close. He's the king in Nineveh. And in the story that we read in Sefer Yonah, he's the one. That's true. So why was Paro saved? So the Al-Sheikh says, the Al-Sheikh says, because Paro, as he was drowning in Yamsuf, cried out, Mi chamocha b'ilim Hashem. Did a kind of tshuva. And because he cried out, Mi chamocha b'ilim Hashem, and he did tshuva, so he was saved. Kadosh Baruch Hu saved him. Yesh kon olamo b'sha'a achas. You can even achieve your olam in one day, in one moment. So I saw in the Sefer Peninim Shotari, he said, he asked a very simple question. He said, this is tshuva? Come on. The guy's drowning. Right? Everything's falling apart. Right? You call this tshuva? So of course, Yom Michamor, Elim Hashem, yeah, help, save me, Michamor, Elim Hashem. So you know what he says? He says, from here you see this is tshuva. Yeah, this is tshuva. Do you know why it's tshuva? Because, and I think I mentioned this way back when, back in Elozman. They always say, what are the three hardest words in the English language to say? I was wrong. And there will be people who will be on their deathbeds. They'll be facing the most frightening circumstances. But they're so certain that they're right, even in their last breath, they won't admit that they're wrong. They just won't do it. Because they're so certain that they're right. Paro was a stubborn individual. He was a very stubborn individual. And if in that last moment, Paro said, Mi chamocha b'ilim Hashem, and he was saying, I'm wrong and you're right, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu was willing to accept that tshuva. I don't know what kind of olam haba Paro had, but he at least saved his olam hazeh. And according to Chazal, he lived many, 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 many years. Say for Yonah, much later.
centuries. So this is the tshuva, this is the message. It says that even you can kona lama sha'achas to come along and say, I was wrong. And in that vein, I want to tell you about a conversation I had on Friday. I think my guest for Shabbos already heard this. So I have a neighbor of mine, good friends, who are making a family simcha. And they asked if we could host a couple just to sleep over in a house. A couple who shows up before midnight. Only some people understood that. Anyway, so that was a wonderful couple. So he's a Belzer Chassid. So they came, and Friday afternoon I was schmoozing with them a little bit. Now, give me a little bit of a background. I started asking about something that's going on, contemporary, current events in the Jewish world. And I'll give you a little bit of a background. Belzer Chassidus, the Chassidus of Belz, was very much part of the Eda Charedes here in Yerushalayim. But in 1979, which is over 30 years ago, for various reasons which are not so important right now, there was a major split. And Belz left the Eda Charedes, they set up their own Beis Din, and there was tremendous infighting that was going on. Belzer Rebbe, over the many, many years, had tried to make shalom. There were reports that 4 months after this started, Belzer Rebbe reached an agreement with the Yav Beis Din, with the Gaivit, the Yav Beis Din of the Eda Charedes, and they actually signed certain protocols. And the agreement was signed, and somehow, after it was signed, it fell apart. I don't know why. Now, the main Chassidus in the Eda Charedes that was very upset at Belz was the Satma Chassidus. Satma Rebbe at the time. And then, after that Satma Rebbe was Nifter, Rebbe Yoel, his son-in-law, Moshe Teitelbaum, he's not a son-in-law, his nephew took over, Moshe Teitelbaum. And when he passed away, his son took over. The present Satma Rebbe is a brother-in-law of the present Belzer Rebbe. They're married to sisters. Two daughters of the Vishnitzer Rebbe. That's a little bit confusing, but okay. Anyway, so this has been going on for decades. About 2 weeks ago, it was a big to-do. It seems that the Belzer Rebbe kept trying to make shalom, and his brother-in-law said to him, well, if you want to make shalom, you have to do what it says in Shulchan Aruch. And it says in Shulchan Aruch that if you were pogeya in the kavod, if you harmed somebody, you have to ask mechila. And if the person's no longer alive, then you have to gather a minion of people and go to his kever and ask mechila. So about 2 weeks ago, approximately, the Belzer Rebbe sent 10 dayanim from Belz, from Eretz Yisrael and other parts of the world, in New York, America, and they went to the kvarim of the two previous Satmar Rebbes, and in each case, they said some Pirkei Tehillim, and then they said that we are here as representatives, the Belzer Rebbe, and we're asking on his behalf, Mechila, if we had been pogeya in your kavod. And, assuming that nothing goes wrong, which things can always do, Satma Rebbe is due to visit Eretz Yisrael in the next few weeks. Supposedly there's going to hopefully be a very historic meeting between the Satma Rebbe and the Belzer Rebbe to make shalom. Why am I telling you all this? Because I asked my guest, what's going on? So he said, yeah, there's a lot of excitement in Belz. And he turned to me and he said the following. You know, it takes a great person to go and apologize for something that he did wrong. And it takes even a greater person to go and apologize for something that he didn't do wrong. Now that, of course, is the perspective of Belz HaChassid about his Rebbe. He says, look how great the Rebbe is. In order to make shalom, he was willing to apologize, even though he wasn't wrong. But there's a very, very profound message in that statement. Because it happens to be, la'aniyus da'iti, irrelevant of this situation here, I'm not taking sides on the issue, but it's a very, very true statement. It's not easy to admit, to apologize when you did something wrong, but it's even greater to apologize when you're convinced that you didn't do anything wrong. Because so many times, there are incidents and there are quarrels and there are disagreements between friends, within families, between spouses, between parents and children, between siblings. We're so convinced that we're right. We're absolutely certain that we're right. And we're more than happy to forgive the other side as soon as they apologize. And it never happens. And the incident, which whatever kind of incident it was, usually smaller than, grows and becomes something so horrible and festers and, until marriages are broken up, siblings don't talk to each other, best friends never want to see each other again, parents and children are distant from each other. And the issue can be resolved, maybe not in all cases, but in many cases, by being the big person. By being that great person, the person who's willing to say those three words, I'm sorry, I was wrong. It's five words. Even if you're not. And shalom is so important. So you apologized first. It didn't make you any less of a person. Never. And I'll let you in on a secret. Just in such a big secret. When you have one of these incidents, and you have a fight with your friend, or a fight with a sibling, or a quarrel with a spouse, and you're absolutely certain that you were right, and somehow or another you overcome your gaiva, and you apologize first, and you say, I'm sorry, I feel bad, I shouldn't have said it, invariably, in most cases, the other person's also going to immediately start to apologize. And when that happens, and you reconcile, you really do feel bad about what happened. You say, that was my best friend. I don't want to have a fight with her. Why should we even fight it? That's my sibling, that's my brother, that's my sister, that's my husband, that's my wife, that's my parent, that's my child. Ugh. Such stupidity, such things. Yeah, I really shouldn't have said what I said. Paro at the last second said Michamo. With Paro we know that he was wrong. You have no questions that I'm right. I don't think Paro was saying, listen, I'm really right, but I'll apologize. But he managed to say it at the last second. Let's not be like Paro. Let's not wait to the last second. Let's not get into such a situation where we're drowning with sorrows and drowning with quarrels. Just to keep in mind and to remember, right? We can become greater people, more wonderful people, and create much more shalom just by being willing to be first and to say, listen, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said it that way. I shouldn't have acted that way. I could have done things differently. I lost my temper. I should have been more careful. I should have been more this. And then we can recline what the Mishnah says, like Matzah Kadosh Baruch Hu Kli Machzik Bracha. Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't find something, utensil that could hold as much bracha. Ela Hashalom.